Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. All of our Baltimore Positive programming brought to you by our friends at Liberty Pure. I'm wearing the hat, Liberty Pure Solutions hat up here. We've been telling you about that. You can obviously just go out to the website and find them at 1-800-CLEAN-WATER or acleanwater.com. Also, our friends at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast, and coffee and more coffee. We're going to need that to get through election season and COVID season and Raven season. Luke Jones joins us now. He was going to be in Owings Mills, but they're not allowing people in Owings Mills because they've had a COVID outbreak. Luke, what could possibly go wrong after losing to the Steelers and having your $100 million left tackle break his ankle in the middle of the game?
I was just going to say, about 5 days ago it was, five, 6 days ago it was, the Ravens were announcing the extension for Ronnie Stanley. They're coming off the bye week. The undefeated Steelers are coming to town without a bye. That's well documented with their rescheduling and schedule shuffling, and everything felt like it was not perfectly aligned, but certainly set up for the Ravens to win on Sunday and get their mojo going a little bit more and go on the kind of run that we saw last year. And look, that can still happen, but you lose Ronnie Stanley for the year, you lose the football game, you wake up Monday morning and Marlon Humphrey's tested positive for COVID-19. You have seven other players who are deemed close contacts. Now, to this point, we're a couple days removed from that. And, of course, testing remains fluid on a daily basis. So don't want to assume anything. But if those players continue to test negative and do not experience any symptoms, then they can play in Indianapolis on Sunday and they can go through a walkthrough on Saturday. But there's still time to go between now and Sunday at 1 o'clock. So you're really waiting with bated breath. If you're anyone in the organization, players, coaches, GM, owner, on down.
We should be shocked it came to this, though, right? I mean, there's 32 teams. Were going to be unscathed this year or not have this happen, right? So sure. The Titans had it happen in a big way. The Marlins had it happen in baseball. There's been random here and there. And, I mean, the head coaches of a couple of these teams had it before the season even began. So, They have a plan for this, right? I mean, they have a protocol for this. They had to have a plan for this because there was a pretty good chance it was going to happen.
Well, and that's why seven players are isolating right now rather than having everyone go along as business as usual, and then you're holding your breath to see if Marlon Humphrey comes in close contact and infects a couple players on Sunday in the locker room or sitting next to him on the bench on the sideline, then that's when you do have the Tennessee Titans example then. And I'm not saying the Ravens are out of the woods yet, but if this is all it is in terms of Humphrey test positive, doesn't play against Indianapolis, but everyone else who's on that reserve COVID list right now because of being deemed a high-risk close contact, they isolate for 5 days. If they don't experience any symptoms and they don't test positive over those 5 days, then you, at that point, 5 days out, you're feeling better about it, and you can proceed. And you hope that's the worst of it, and the best case scenario at this point is those guys all play. Marlon Humphrey doesn't get terribly sick or anything of that nature and hopefully doesn't infect anyone else in his life. And he comes back and plays. And you hope everyone learns from that as maybe a little reminder that we need to continue to remain vigilant with these protocols. So to this point, yeah, it's not ideal. And certainly when you're talking about seven defensive players, all guys who played snaps on Sunday against Pittsburgh. I mean, that's not ideal from a football standpoint, but from a virus mitigation standpoint, it's why you do have these protocols in place. And you hope that Matt Judon and LJ Fort and Patrick Queen and Deshaun Elliott, Malik Jackson and Tyus Bowser, and most likely Terrell Bonds, who had been a practice squad call up, you hope that none of them test positive and they can go out there and play. Now, what that means going up against a pretty good Indianapolis team, we're going to find that out. But from a virus standpoint, to your point, if the Ravens were going to go through the entire season, and I mean, they had Nigel Warrior, an undrafted rookie safety, when they did entry testing back in late July, he was placed on the COVID list. Brandon Williams, who did not test positive, he was a close contact. Probably we're being unrealistic if you thought they wouldn't have another issue the rest of the season, but you're hoping that everyone else was responsible and vigilant. And then, you know, this is the extent of it as far as the contacts and then Humphrey coming back at the end of 10 days.
Luke Jones is here. We are trying to make sense of all things COVID as well as the election before it's all over with. We'll be hearing from Don Mohler and others as we get into what used to just be a fun week around here hating on Indianapolis. Had Bob Kravitz on, you know, as much as we talk about, you know, our team, their team's trying to figure it out, and he's pimping the defense and saying, hey, the defense is the better part of the team. And, you know, we're worried about the secondary right now on our team. And you've gone to great lengths to talk about Tavon Young, and you went for great lengths in 2014 and 15 and 16 and 17 for them to make the secondary the strength of the team. They've done that. They invested. And now they will walk into a road game against a really veteran quarterback who loves this sort of game, much more so than Joe Burrow would, I would think, at this point in his career. And they're going to walk in a little more naked than they want to walk in on Sunday after losing to the Steelers, after not practicing the way they want to practice this week. And I know John likes to make football the most important thing in the whole universe inside the building, but football's not the most important thing inside the universe in the building this week. And the Titans are a great example of having had all those things go wrong a couple of weeks ago and hold it together. I'm not saying the Ravens can't hold it together. I'm just saying this is a unique challenge even by John Harbaugh standards.
Yeah, I mean, it's unprecedented circumstance for the Ravens. You know, I mean, certainly you deal with injuries, and I can think back to, what was it, 2016, when you and I went up to the Meadowlands back-to-back weeks playing the Giants and the Jets, and I believe the Ravens had, I want to say they had seven veteran players that were inactive. I mean, didn't even play. That's how banged up they were, and that's how you kind of view this right now, at least until you get the go-ahead of these guys being able to play. But what does that mean when Patrick Queen, who we've talked so much about being a rookie, what does that mean when he can't practice and get on the field over the course of the week? Doesn't say he can't play on Sunday, but how effective is he going to be? How well prepared is he going to be? John Harbaugh brought up even just from a conditioning standpoint. I mean, these are guys that are isolating at home. Not to say that they don't have weight benches and some things that the team can get to them working out in the same way that everyone was doing back in the spring when everyone was away from the facility. But those are challenges, and those are, you know, we always talk about margin for error in the NFL and how it's so razor thin. These are the types of things that can really have an impact. I mean, we've seen veteran players in the past where they don't practice all week, and yeah, they show up on Sunday, but they look like that player, you know, they physically, it looks like them, and you know their name, but it doesn't look like the guy when they're playing. So how much of that could exist for the Ravens on Sunday? Time will tell. I will say this. Indianapolis does have a very tough defense. If you're looking for the positive side of this, strictly speaking from football, from a football perspective, you know, you don't have Ronnie Stanley, but none of the players on the reserve COVID list right now are offensive players. So if you're looking for what the bigger challenge is, that would in my humble opinion, that would be the bigger challenge. You mentioned Phillip Rivers, however, and as much as I haven't been terribly impressed with the Indianapolis offense and specifically the passing game, he's looked okay at times, but there's a little bit of a Ben Roethlisberger effect for him, and maybe it's more pronounced for him because Ben at least had the excuse of coming off the elbow surgery. But you see a guy that's he's not the Phillip Rivers of 3 or 4 years ago. He can still do that at times, but you're not consistently seeing that for 60 minutes week in and week out. But, and this is something we talked about after the game on Sunday, I think with what Pittsburgh was able to do in the second half of that game where they just went empty. They went very rarely having a running back on the field. They had four wide or five wide, four wide and a tight end split in the slot. They did a lot of passing from empty formations, and they used some of those stacks, and the Ravens had issues with that. Why? Because their cornerback depth isn't what it had been, and you were down to – you were fine with your top three, Peters, Humphrey, Jimmy Smith, but then when you added a fourth corner to the mix, it was no longer Tavon Young. It was no longer Anthony Averett. It was Terrell Bonds. And now, when you know you're not going to have Humphrey, all right, you have Jimmy Smith and Marcus Peters on the outside. Who's going to be that slot guy? Is it going to be Bonds after not practicing all week? Is it going to be Khalil Dorsey? Who
are these guys,
right,
by the way?
Right, well, and that's the thing. And look, and to be very clear, Nestor,
I saw a guy on the field on Sunday. I'm like, who is
Terrell
that
Bonds?
Guy?
Right, and he's been with them over the last two summers. Look, for an undrafted cornerback, I think he's got some ability. But
clearly, so do they, because they have more on the field, right?
But that's not a second-round pick. That's not Tavon Young, who you just extended last offseason. That's not Marlon Humphrey, who you just gave a $100 million contract to. So, yeah, I mean, people, there's been so much hand-wringing about Anthony Averett, even, and he's someone who, you know, was a fourth-round pick a few years back. But that's not Marlon Humphrey. You can't expect him to play at that level. You can't expect him to play at the Marcus Peters level. So whether it's Dorsey, whether it's whether it's Terrell Bonds, whether it's they have another cornerback, Nate Hairston, on the practice squad, who, you know, I mean, this is the week. You better have your roster, because there could be some practice squad call-ups that are not just the 53rd guy, or I guess not the 53rd, the 48th guy on game day, but they could be – you know, they could be guys that are playing. I mean, you know, we talk about the secondary. Look at the inside linebacker position right now. Patrick Queen, LJ Fort, Malik Harrison. I mean, these guys are all on the reserve COVID list right now as close contacts. So I imagine, even though, as you pointed out, we're not allowed to be out in Owings Mills and watching practice this week, the starting inside linebackers for practice this week, Chris Board. Okay, we know who that is. And Christian Welch, who is an undrafted rookie who's been a practice squad call up the last couple weeks.
Sounds like a nice
special
young man.
Teams, to play yes. special teams. Iowa product. Again, a guy that they like enough to keep in the program, but not to be
this
starting on Sunday.
This is not the
Sunday.
Third preseason game,
correct.
Dude, right? Literally.
More like the fourth preseason game. Yeah. Even. So I mean, this is what they're dealing with right now. So when you go back to some of the things that we like to talk about week in and week out in terms of preparation, in terms of culture, in terms of buying in and trusting one another, those are some things that are going to matter a little more this week. Now, those aren't principles that you can quantify, but you need everyone to be preparing. And, you know, whether it's the guys that are close contacts right now and, you know, that they're fully engaged in the remote meetings, and they're fully engaged in their playbook, and they're doing everything they possibly can to stay ready from a physical standpoint. And oh yeah, they're still isolating. Or if you're talking about some of these younger guys that, let's face it, are going to get some great opportunities in practice this week, they need to be ready, because all it takes is one or two of those guys testing positive over the course of the next couple of days that won't necessarily cancel the game if we're talking about the guys that are already isolating. But if Matt Judon and Tyus Bowser, and I'm just using those two names as examples out of the seven, well, that means some other guys are going to have to step up right away. Or if a couple of those inside linebackers I just mentioned, well, Christian Welch has to be ready to play, because what other choice do they have? So it's very unique in the sense that while there are comparisons to just treating it as an injury, there is this unknown that, you know, it's not as though someone's dealing with an ankle sprain and there's, you know, a 50-50 chance that they physically can be ready to go. It's, you know, you're just at the mercy of virus testing, and, you know, these guys will be perfectly ready to play in a vacuum, but we'll also get a sense this week of just how important practice really is. We hear it all the time from coaches, how important practice is. And we talked about this at the beginning of the season with no preseason and a truncated version of training camp and what kind of impact that would have. You know, to this point, I mean, we're far enough away from that now where I'd say, you know, probably didn't have a dramatic impact on the start of the season. Maybe not as much as we thought anyway, but you know, it's a little bit different when you're 7-8 weeks into the season now and you've already dealt with some injuries and you're already going through some trials and tribulations. And, oh, yeah, you just lost to your biggest rival and now you're going on the road. And you may or may not have 6 or 7 other guys in addition to, oh, yeah, your best player on defense and you just lost your second best player on offense. You know, we've made the comparisons to 2012 and 2000. I'm not ready to call this as dramatic as those, and this is so different because it's related to a pandemic and not knowing what the future is going to bring with that, but they're going through some adversity right now. There's no question about that. So how they handle that is going to be really interesting to see. And as I mentioned, you know, you got to be ready for Indianapolis. I mean, this, I don't think is an elite team, but they are certainly a team that's played well, and they've played really well on the defensive side of the ball. And we know that the Ravens, you know, the rushing totals aside on Sunday, we know that they're still searching for it on offense, specifically through the air. So, you know, this is the kind of game that the Ravens need to show up and play a good football game. And with the preparations during the course of the week being disrupted, you just don't know what to expect exactly from that standpoint.
The Ronnie Stanley thing and the emotional fallout of that on Sunday, then the reality fallout of where all that is and trading deadlines and cap numbers. And you think they're going to play through with what they – I mean, are they okay with what they have as you see it? I mean, this is why they brought Fluker in, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out because the trade deadline came in and passed on Tuesday, and we didn't really see many moves made around the league, and I don't think that was shocking from the standpoint of, you know, the 5-day intake process, and you know that's why the Ravens made the trade when they did for Yannick Ngakoue, you know, almost a couple weeks ago now at this point. But I mean, this is where they are. I think even some of the worst teams in the league are not necessarily eager to trade quality offensive linemen because, you know, whether you're a team like the Jets who has Sam Darnold, who I'm not going to sit here and say he's their definitive quarterback of the future, but I don't think people there are giving up just yet. Well, you want to have something around him to protect him and try to, I would say, cultivate that development, although it, you know, it hasn't happened whatsoever because that they're such a big disaster. But the point is, there isn't a whole lot of quality in terms of offensive linemen around the league. We've talked about that for years now. And to try to pull off a trade for that in the middle of the season is difficult when you've already traded some draft picks. You did that to get Ngakoue, and you don't have a ton of cap space. And you're trying to balance wanting to give yourself the best chance now, but also keep yourself in good position for the future. And you know, I would say, you know, without having a chance to have dialogue with Eric DaCosta about it, I would say that they explored that, but any potential options that were available probably weren't something that they either viewed to be a definitive upgrade or a big enough one to justify what they were going to give up. So I said it after the game on Sunday, and I'll continue to say it. I think Orlando Brown Jr. can play a solid left tackle. He's not going to play a $100 million contract version of that. But the big question
is... But it's not going to look second team on the left side.
Well, but on the flip side, DJ Fluker at right tackle, I do have questions because, I mean, this is a guy who was drafted. He was a former first-round pick out of Alabama. You know, very, very highly thought of coming out of college in 2013. You know, I think the Chargers had hoped he would be a left tackle, and you know, that never materialized. So he played right tackle for a couple years, and they didn't really love how that looked. So what did they do? They moved him to right guard, and that's where he's played most of his career. So you love him. Let me rephrase that. I think you're perfectly fine with him as your number three swing tackle on game day, but him having to play now moving forward at right tackle, that's where I really have questions, and that's where I think the Ravens are going to have to offer him some help. And whenever you're in positions where you need to have max protect and you need to offer help, that's one less guy who can go out and run a route. And we're talking about a passing game that's trying to get going. So, you know, there's definitely some concern here. There has to be. I said this before, if there weren't, then why?
Well, this wasn't the team they wanted to go to post with.
All right.
You know, when you turn the corner in November and you are where you are and COVID has hit and if there's a Purple Rain 3 at the end of this, you know, this would be rally time right now. This is when the book would get interesting.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean,
because they've been punched in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, even put the COVID stuff aside, even if it's Marlon Humphrey missing one game and that's it, fine. But you just lost your second best offensive player. I mean, that's, as I said, and I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com in my latest 12 Ravens thoughts. If we're just going to use the next man up mantra because it makes you feel good and you want to try to look at it as a half glass full thing, well, then why the heck did you just pay Ronnie Stanley $100 million? You've clearly valued him to a tremendous degree. So this is a devastating loss for them. Do I think it completely ruins their Super Bowl hopes? No. Lamar is the only guy they could lose, and I would say that. But does it really hurt their Super Bowl aspirations? Of course it does. I think you're living in fantasy land because we've already talked about this offensive line having some concerns. And, oh, yeah, Tyree Phillips is on IR now, which means he'll miss at least the next three games with a high ankle sprain. So, you know, I think we saw it on Sunday. As well as the Ravens ran the ball, and I still think that's a positive to take out of Sunday's game. You know, all the disappointment and bitterness of the loss aside, they ran the ball exceptionally well. But I think we saw Matt Skura, we saw Patrick McCary really struggle in pass protection inside there. And look, the good news is you're not going to play the Pittsburgh front every week. The bad news is on Sunday, You are facing a front that has DeForest Buckner, who's a hell of a player and has been a major difference maker for that defensive line. So,
for the record, I wanted to draft him. I did remember that. I wanted to draft him.
But he was the pick after Stanley, I believe he was. So, you know, I mean, there are going to be challenges every week. And when we were already talking about missing Marshall Yanda and trying to figure that out, and not just Yanda not being there, but the impact that had on Orlando Brown at right tackle, the impact that would have on Matt Skura at center. Now we're talking about losing your anchor at left tackle. I mean, I'm not putting Ronnie Stanley into Jonathan Ogden territory just yet. I think that would be a major disrespect to J.O., but Ronnie Stanley's damn good, and he's widely regarded as a guy who could be the best left tackle in football. So, you know, just think back to those times when the Ravens didn't have J.O. back in the day, and, you know, there was a lot of angst. There was a lot of concern whenever that happened. So, like I said, I think – Orlando Brown can do an okay job at left tackle, but what does that mean for right tackle? What does that mean for the overall pass protection? Because keep in mind, this passing game has not been firing on all cylinders. And, you know, really on Sunday, I mean, Lamar completes less than 50% of his passes, throws two interceptions, could have had a third interception. It's not just him. I want to be clear about that. The pass protection needs to improve. I think Greg Roman could scheme up some more, you know, easy completions to get Lamar going a little bit. I think that's something you have to look at as well. But to bring it back to your question and pondering whether they can win a Super Bowl without Ronnie Stanley, I think they still can, but
well, he's not coming back, and this is week one, right? This is the first test, right?
Well, no question about
it. He's gone.
But, and we can talk about the run, and they ran for 265 yards, and that's great. That's their identity, and that never should have changed. However, this passing game has to be operating at a more efficient level, or it's going to be a very short excursion into January once again. I mean, they have to be more efficient. You look at the numbers across the board, you know, since week three, I think Lamar has about an 80 passer rating. He's in the, you know, in the 50s in terms of completion percentage. He's throwing more interceptable passes. He got away with that in the Cincinnati game, if you remember, but didn't
he's
get away
running
with it
less effectively by a lot as a, I mean, as one person, as an entity, and not that he was going to run the way he ran last year ever again, right? But every part of it is diminished right now, and that's got to turn around.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not as concerned about that part. I think some of that is just they deliberately weren't doing it as much. But I will say this. I do think teams are doing a better job against him, and maybe they're not letting him get those consistent 10, 11 yards. He's still we've seen it. He can still break a 30 or 50-yarder.
He's still their best running back.
Sure, no question, no question. But my concern still lies with the passing game. And, I mean, they have to figure out a way to become more efficient there. And, you know, I was dismissive of it after the game. You hope what Willie Snead was able to do is – a sign of getting some other guys involved. You know, Miles Boykin caught a touchdown, but, you know, Marquise Brown had two targets and wasn't happy. And I think John Harbaugh handled it well. And, you know, I don't think it's anything that's a major concern moving forward, but it is a sign of, you know, a crack in the foundation in terms of these guys being frustrated. To this point, they had been very positive. You know, there was very much a sense of flipping on the switch. You know, some people even talked about that after the bye week, kind of a natural time to do it, right? You know, I mean, you kind of look at what they did last year against New England coming out of the bye week. But now when you've lost Stanley, you've had another game where, you know, the passing game just wasn't doing a whole lot. Lamar turning the ball over, which you hope he's able to clean up. I mean, that was one of the, you know, you can talk all you want about all the plays and yardage and touchdowns that he threw. He had six interceptions last year. I mean, he did such a fantastic job through all the highlight and spectacular plays. He protected the football. And that was something we talked about from his rookie year going into last year. That was a big question. Now we've seen, you know, you hope that it's not full-blown regression. You hope it's a little bit more of a blip.
I mean, I call it more of an outlier because it didn't look like anything else we've seen his body.
That's
of
what
work.
You hope. Well, and look, I think the outlier is throwing two or three picks, you know, throwing two picks and, you know, could have had the third. If
well,
it's not
the outlier for me. It's just body language when things go wrong. I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, and I think, you know, it's tough. And I've used the term calibrated. I've said all year, I've watching the offense, it doesn't feel like it's fully calibrated. And you know, that sounds a little wishy-washy because there are times where you see it and it does look really good. And you look at some of the final game totals. I mean, this is still a team that's scoring. You know, they've averaged you know, going into last Sunday's game, they were right around 30 points per game. I mean, you know, it's not as though they haven't been scoring, but they've had to lean much more on the defense, giving them good field position and taking the ball away. And, you know, it's just been a little more disjointed. It hasn't been the flowing, rhythmic offense they had last year where they just, I mean, they just imposed their will. So, you know, maybe what they were able to do Sunday, they can get back to running the ball 220 yards a game. And, you know, with that, Lamar is protected a little more in the passing game, and you can kind of limit opportunities. You know, not limit opportunities, but maybe limit risk, maybe be the better way to describe that. And that gets them going and more efficient. But, you know, I mean, we saw the interception to start the second half. Yeah, that was not a play that, you know, he was pressured a great deal. He threw off his back foot, got a little lazy with his mechanics, and didn't read the linebacker in coverage properly, and underthrew the ball to Mark Andrews, and it gets picked off. You know, I mean, that's the kind of play that an MVP caliber quarterback just can't make. I mean it kills you. It turned a 10-point lead into a one-score game just like that. So, you know, those are the types of things that he did such a phenomenal job of avoiding last year, and he's got to get back to playing that sharper brand of football. But in order to do that, he does need better pass protection. And that's when you go back to the Stanley question. That's where you need to see Greg Roman come up with some more creative scheme and ideas from a passing play standpoint. And you hope that means more involvement for guys like Devin Duvernay. But you know, it's going to be a collective effort. But when you're talking about it being a collective effort, you keep coming back to the fact that, you know, the guy that they just awarded a lucrative contract extension to, you know, just had his ankle crushed and is out for the year now. So can't be a pity party, and you can't view it that way. But to sit here and say that that's not going to have a profound impact, you know, I'd be disingenuous if I was going to be dismissive of that. It's a big deal. So it's a challenge. And we're going to see starting on Sunday how the Ravens handle that, as I mentioned, against a pretty good Indianapolis front.
He is Luke Jones. He covers all things Ravens. I was allegedly headed for Indianapolis this week. I may be a conscientious objector this week for all sorts of reasons, COVID and otherwise. Last thing for you, because I don't know that we're going to talk again before, and we'll be on social media and going at it and doing what we do at Baltimore Positive, but one of the things that really struck me about baseball when it started to like unravel, when it went to seven innings and two games on Saturday and like all of that and how unbalanced and all of it with baseball, is it I called it Eddie Fainer and the All-Stars. I don't want that to devolve into this. We're 8 weeks into this. They've done a nice job as a league. I saw the Broncos shut their facility down. 49ers, facilities are getting shut down everywhere. Nestor's shutting down this week. I'm shutting my facility down and keeping it here at the condo in Baltimore instead of going to Indy. It's one trip to Indianapolis I don't think I need to make this weekend. Just having made the one to Houston and Philadelphia and Washington, I feel like, you know, knocking on wood, I'm on borrowed time here. But there is a point where the league really needs to be careful because, like, I'm 2 minutes into this with the injuries and now with five players, seven players, more players. Maybe they'll play this week. Maybe they won't even play this week. Maybe they'll move the game. Maybe they'll bounce a bye week. Maybe I don't know, but they need to hold this together to have some credibility that I lost as a sports fan. You didn't. It's fine. If you're watching the World Series, and I know the ratings were down, whatever percentage, 25%, whatever it was, fine. But in order to buy in, this can't devolve into the third preseason game. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, and I mean, this goes back to the, you know, perfect being the enemy of good thing. I mean, you know, if we're going to say we're just going to shut it down when things go poorly, then we never should have tried. I mean, some people feel that way, and that's fine. But I think it's important to stress here for the Ravens example and basically for every example we've seen except for the Titans to this point. You know, I mean, they're the one who had, you know, what, up into the teens, I guess it was, between players and personnel testing positive. I mean, that was a full-blown outbreak. The Ravens to this point have not had an outbreak. They've had one player test positive. Why they are isolating seven other players is the hopes of if there was an outbreak, if there is going to be an outbreak, that's going to be the extent of it. That's why you do the contact tracing. That's why you identify anyone who came into close, prolonged contact with Marlon Humphrey, whether it was on the bench, in the locker room, team bus, whatever, wherever it might have been. And that's why they go through that. you do that in the hopes of this not becoming a full-blown outbreak. And again, that doesn't mean they're out of the woods at this point, a couple days later, just because they've had a couple days of negative tests, but that's what you need to do. But I'll continue to say, and I've talked about this before, and we'll continue to talk about it, because at some point it's going to happen, whether it's the Ravens, whether it's another team. There's going to be a team or two teams that are going to have to cancel a game, postpone a game, because one of the teams has already had its bye week and there's just going to be no way to do it. That's where you need to adapt and have a week 18. And you push back the postseason a week and you deal with it. And I know the league has already talked about now the contingency plan of, if you get to a point where not everyone can play 16 games, then you'll go to an 8-team playoff field in each league. I mean, fine, I guess. But, you know, I mean, it comes down to it. And with baseball, I mean, the Marlins outbreak and the Cardinals outbreak came so early in the season, what, the first 3 weeks of the season. And you know, at that point, there was so much chatter about, you know, shutting down the season. This isn't going to work. Cancel it. And I mean, at some point in time, we just, to me, my personal feeling is you have to make the best of it. And you have to realize that it's not all going to be perfectly fair. It's not all going to work. I mean, the Steelers got screwed out of their bye week, you know, and you know, they can cry about it, or they can go to work, and that's a team that's still undefeated. And you know, give them credit for that, begrudgingly, here in Baltimore. But your concern is well founded, and I'm not saying I disagree with that concern. But you know, we've seen before teams that lose two or three quarterbacks and they're down. I mean, look at the Cowboys right now, where they are right now with their quarterback situation. And you know, that even though Dalton's on the COVID list this week, you know, he got hurt after Dak Prescott got hurt. I mean, the Ravens, they had they started Jimmy Clausen in a game a few years back. I mean, you know, things are going to happen that are, you're just going to look at it and say, well, it's not our year, or this isn't our week. So, you know, I'm not trying to be dismissive of the virus and the pandemic through that lens, but it is a case where, you know, the Ravens just lost their best defensive player for the Indianapolis game. You treat it in the same way, you know, taking aside the health concern and the virus part of it, but from a football standpoint, you treat it as though, well, he sprained his MCL and he's out for the next week or two. You know, I mean, that happens all the time in football. So your point's well taken about not wanting to get to a point where you're having to activate 12 of the 16 guys on your practice squad just to field a team, but it's kind
just
of
making the
are.
Point. I have bought yeah. in. I don't yeah. want this to devolve into a season with an asterisk, but it probably was always going to have that before it started, right? Like that at some point a team was going to be unable to post and play. And I've talked about that for 3 months and you know, we're now getting into the cold and flu season.
Oh, sure. No question about it. And, but I mean, this has never been normal. I mean, the Ravens, we're just excited about the fact that they had 4,000 fans watching the Steelers game on Sunday. I mean, just think about that. Take a step back. A year ago, we were talking about what would happen when the Ravens hosted the Steelers in week 8. What would happen? And you'd say that there were 4,000 fans there. You'd say, what the heck's going on? Like, what happened? So it's weird. It's not ideal. It's not perfect. If people want to put an asterisk on, you know, the Dodgers winning or the Lakers winning this year, or any sporting event we could talk about with no fans or neutral sites or bubbles or non-bubbles, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's, you know, should be treated as normal, but it's where we are right now. And if weird, abnormal, less than ideal football is the only choice we get compared to not having anything at all and not trying, then I'm still going to take that. But yeah, your point's well taken. And We see the cases up around the country. So, you know, it would be naive to think that the league isn't going to reflect that, at least to some degree, even when you consider the lengths that these guys are going through to try to mitigate.
Well, I'd love to ask Marlon Humphrey what he did to get it, but we won't be given that opportunity. Ness at BaltimorePositive.com is the way to find me. Luke at WNST.net is the way to find him. He is Baltimore Luke out on Twitter and Instagram and out on Facebook and posting our videos and bringing it all together in one place at WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, where we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.